Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In my time in football, I've seen some strange things happen in the kicking game, especially in punting, both on television and games I officiated. But this next story from Timothy B. Brown of Football Archaeology has us punting behind barbed wire fences. Tim's up in a minute to tell us all about it.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pig Pen, your portal to positive football history. And we have a great day planned for you today. On this episode, Timothy P. Brown of FootballArchaeology.com is joining us, just like he does each and every Tuesday. Tim, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Darren, thank you. How are you doing this evening?
I am doing great. And how about yourself?
Yeah, can't complain. Going to head out of town in a few days and get away for a week. So well, looking forward to it.
Well, that's great because this winter time, it's almost like, especially us up in the colder climates, are a bit of a prisoner, almost like we're behind a barbed wire fence. And I had to stretch for that one to segue into our topic tonight. Yeah. That's why Tim is laughing, because he recently wrote a post titled Punting from Behind a Barbed Wire Fence. Tim, that sounds like a pretty risky business there. And maybe you could explain this title.
Yeah, so this is one where there's like multiple rules involved that were current in 1907 when this event occurred, but are long gone from the game. So it's one, I came across, I've done a couple of different articles from a series that ran in the 1920s called The Most Spectacular Play I've Ever Seen. And they went out and they interviewed a bunch of people about, the most spectacular play they ever saw. And so this guy named Bill or C.W. Street mentioned a play that he, in a game he had participated in. So, just to kind of set the stage a little bit, this guy, C.W., played at Auburn and then for 2 years, and then at Washington and Lee. And it was during his senior year at Washington and Lee in 1907 that this game occurred. But, he then went on. He was a track and wrestling official. And I mean that both in terms of, help like officiating, but also kind of managing. He was part of, the U.S. Olympic teams for both as an administrator and an official type. But he also was the field judge for the 1929 Rose Bowl, which is the game when Roy, the wrong way Regals play. So he was on the field for that play. So anyways, he saw some spectacular plays, and that was, the wrong way Regals wasn't one of them. Although I guess actually it wouldn't have occurred by the time that the articles came out.
Yeah, so he might've changed his mind after that play, right?
Yeah. So what happened with this guy was he was the captain of the W&L team, and they were playing Bucknell, close game. And at one point Bucknell drove the ball down to the 3-yard line. And then they, the W&L's defense held. So the ball was turned over on downs. So back in that time, if you had the ball inside your 10, it was very common that you punted on first down. And so he's saying, yeah, that's what we're going to do. But in this particular instance, the, back then they didn't have hash marks. So if the play ended over towards the sideline, or the previous play ended over towards the sideline, that's where the next play started. And then this is 1907, so they didn't have end zones yet. They had a goal line, but no end line, no end zones. And so in a lot of locations, since the ball couldn't, the only way you could score a touchdown was to run the ball across the goal line. You could catch a pass, a forward pass in 1907. But if the ball in the air or bounding went across the goal line, it was a turnover. It's basically a touchback. So basically you didn't need the depth in the end zone. It was like all you needed was across the end zone. And so as a result, they would fit playing fields into pretty tight spaces. And there might be a wall just beyond the end zone in a stadium like the Polo Grounds. So in this case, on one side of the end zone, there was a barbed wire fence, a little bit behind the end zone. And so the street asked the referee, can we move the ball over to the other side of the field so that we can punt? And the referee says, I understand why you want to do that, but no, you can't. That's not within the rules. We can't just move the ball to the other side of the field. So street's like, okay, we're playing by the rules, so I'm going to play by the rules too. So what he does is he tells his punter to go on the other side, go through the gate, lock the gate, and then go on the other side of the barbed wire fence and stand there to be ready to take the snap, you know. So that's what the punter does. So he's back there. He gets a snap, and the Bucknell defenders, you know, start racing towards him, but they stop before they get to the barbed wire fence, and they can't figure out how to get to the guy. And in the meantime, his people are running downfield. And he's just kind of waiting there, ready to, you know, he's waiting to punt the ball until his teammates get downfield. And now the other thing about the rules of the time was in 1906, they made the, you know, what they call for a while, the quarterback kick or the onside punt. In 1906, they made it so that if you punted the ball, any one of your teammates could recover the ball and advance it. You know, they had as much right to the ball as the return man. So by the time he punted it, they had, you know, 10 of his teammates downfield and just one return man. So they end up recovering the ball. You know, W&L, you know, recovers the ball. And but unfortunately, they ended up, the same guy who was the punter, on another occasion, he was back to punt and he stepped behind the end zone, or not, I should say behind the goal line, and was tackled for a safety. So they end up losing the game 2-0. But it is the only known game in which a punt was made from behind a barbed wire fence.
Wow.
If anybody else knows of any others.
Yeah, it greatly reduces your chance of getting your kick blocked. That's for...
Yeah, that's great cup protection. You know, if you've got nice barbed wire fence in front of you.
Think about the pressure on the long snapper, though. He's got to make sure he clears that fence or, you know, there could be some trouble there. Ball.
Yeah, and they only used one ball at the time. So if that ball had popped.
Well, but even that, okay, let's say he snaps that ball at the rules at that time and it hits the wire of the fence and drops it straight down. That's a loose ball, right? So you're going to have.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you have these guys going in for a fumble next to a barbed wire fence and trying to recover. Like, ooh, boy.
Yep.
Ooh. Holy porcupines. Batman, that sounds like a bad one.
Yeah, right? That could kind of a prickly situation.
Yeah, that's for sure. Wow. I'll tell you what, Tim, you definitely go through and you find some interesting ones. That's a good one. I would have never even ever thought of that being, you know, but if there's no end zones, there's no out of bounds. So
yeah,
it probably goes on forever to
it. Yeah. It's an infinite end zone or infinite goal area.
Very, very interesting. Really makes you think on that one.
Well, and again, I mean, there's the, you know, just the difference in the, you had the onside punt, you know, you had the ball over without hash marks, the ball's over near the sideline. There's no end zone. It's just a lot of different rules, in place
Yeah.
back then.
Amazing how much the game has evolved, and I think we're probably all grateful for it, except for maybe the punters. Maybe they would still want the rule to be like you just described, so they could have some extra protection.
Yeah, well, I'll do a little reading on the rule book tonight, see if they have any specific mentions of barbed wire fences.
Well, I wonder if it would have what would have happened. Okay, it's like some of the stadiums you described where the goal line was very close to the wall of possibly the stands. Would the punter be able to stand in the stands if the snapper could get it up to where he was and cut kick from an elevated position? Really?
Yeah, presumably. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, the one, fumbles out of bounds. The ball was not dead when it went out of bounds back then. So, tumbling over water buckets, over cinder tracks, all that kind of stuff. And so, and it was, a little bit of the reason why they kept everybody seated along the sidelines was, I mean, it, by rule, they, teams were limited to like two or three or five. The rules varied over the years, but you could only have a certain number of people standing along the sidelines. Everybody else had to be kneeling or seated. So, that's why you see in the old photographs, everybody's sitting on the bench.
Boy, as a former sideline official, I'm so jealous of those times that everybody sat on the bench. That would have been lovely. Wow. Great job, Tim. You have such interesting little pieces like that, your tidbits on footballarchaeology.com. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit how they too can partake in enjoying Football Archaeology's information and content?
So you just go to footballarchaeology.com. I mean, obviously you can just go there whenever you want, but if you want to subscribe, you can subscribe for free. That gives you access to about a third of the emails I send out. You'll get full access to the other article, or to the article of the others. You can preview the article, and then kind of cuts off on you. And then paid subscription is $5 a month or $50 a year. You can do a 7-day trial free, that kind of stuff. And then I also post on Threads and on Twitter. I'm not really active on Threads. I just post there, and then Twitter, a couple times a week, I'm posting something, in reaction to what somebody else has said, and blah blah blah. So, fun conversations that occur out there in Twitter land.
All right. His name is Timothy P. Brown. FootballArchaeology.com is his website. And Tim, we really appreciate you joining us and telling us about this very interesting piece of football history. And we'd love to do it again next week.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here. But we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.